Hi, Dave Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 788, Greek Tragedy, part two, subtitled Clausewitzian Economics, the Continuation of War by Other Means. This is being recorded on April 13th of the year 2014. We are going to examine at one level some of the things that have been taking place in Europe and that I was unable to discuss directly, at least on the air, when I was not in a position to record programs. I was blogging away, and the distillate of some of what I have written is going to be inserted into this. Or it will constitute, I should say, the content of this program. Now, what we're going to be doing is taking a look at one level at what the astounding things that have been taking place in and that have been imposed on the country of Greece by its as a result of its participation or inclusion in the European Monetary Union, and B, as a result of the austerity doctrine that has been imposed on it. This is not to say that Greece did not mismanage its own economy. It certainly did, and there was a lot of corruption. But because of the fact that Greece does not have its own independent currency, it cannot devalue its currency in order to stimulate Greek exports, thereby, to a certain extent, jump-starting its economy. In recent decades, for example, both Japan and China, and recently Germany, by virtue of the very weak euro, have had strong economic success as a result of having a weak currency, thereby making their manufactured goods and finished products relatively inexpensive for foreign markets. Greece is not in the position to do that. And For the Record, program 746, we took a look at what was taking place in Greece. What we're going to be looking at in this program is what really is being done to Greece. Now, the title, Clausewitzian Economics, refers to the Prussian military theoretician Karl von Clausewitz. His most famous doctrine is a book called On War. Now, von Clausewitz was the originator of the concept of total war, that is to say that war involved the complete commitment of all of the resources of war and all of the elements of one's own society, and that in turn the targeting of all of the resources and elements of the enemy's society is part of and fundamental to the war-making process. Von Clausewitz once observed that war is the continuation of politics. You will see it as politics, policy, or diplomacy by other means. What we're going to be looking at in this program is the Clausewitzian concept of the post-war. Von Clausewitz felt that the post-war was fundamental to the successful realization of war on the battlefield, and that is what we are going to be looking at here. The post-war could be considered the continuation of war by other means. What we're going to be looking at in this program is the realization of the European Monetary Union as the fulfillment of the geopolitical strategy first conceived in the 19th century by Friedrich Liszt, last name L-I-S-T. Liszt advocated a German-dominated pan-European economic union as a vehicle for European and world domination. Very quickly, we are going to run through not only Friedrich Liszt's concept, but also the enunciation of that same doctrine during World War I by a key German general, and then its enunciation at the very in the early stage, the middle stage, and the end of World War II by Third Reich luminaries, I should say. And we are also going to be examining in a big way what is being done to Greece. We are going to look at von Clausewitzian or Clausewitzian economics, the continuation of war by other means, and the fulfillment of the Liszt doctrine, during the successive German wars and post-wars, culminating with the EMU and the EU, is fundamental to this. One thing to remember very quickly as we launch into the substance of the program is the fact that one of the keys for joining the euro has been that a country's debt its yearly budgetary debt cannot be more than 3% of its GDP in that year. So when you get a country that is whose economy is receding, they must constantly cut jobs and expenditures from the public sector, thereby placing those individuals or those companies that depend on orders on their order books from the public sector into the have-nots, into the red, so to speak. So you get, as a result, what is called a deflationary spiral. And Greece, because it is part of the euro, cannot have a budgetary deficit of more than 3% of GDP, and with a horribly depressed economy and unable to devalue its own currency, Greece has been experiencing some really horrible things. Now, about von Clausewitz, in order to understand Clausewitzian economics or the continuation of war by other means, we're going to turn to a book that is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. It's called All Honorable Men, written by James Stewart Martin, published in hardcover by Little Brown in hardcover, copyright 1950. And he discusses von Clausewitz and the concept of war as a continuation of diplomacy or politics or policy. You will see it translated all of those ways by other means. And in that same context, the post-war as a continuation of war by other means. On page 235, James Stewart Martin writes as follows. The end of battle in 1945 had signaled the start of a new kind of war, a post-war. Germany's classical military theorist Karl von Clausewitz is famous for having declared that, quote, war is the continuation of diplomacy by other means, unquote. In dealing with a Germany which had gone to school with von Clausewitz for generations, we know that conversely, a post-war is the continuation of war by other means. Since von Bismarck, wars and post-wars have formed a continuous series, changing the quality of the events only slightly from year to year, with no such thing as a clear distinction between the heat of battle and the calm of peace. James Stewart Martin, of course, was in charge of the economic warfare section of the antitrust division of the Department of Justice during World War II, and one of the people charged with breaking up the transatlantic, not only the large German cartels, but the transatlantic financial and industrial axis, of which the Bush family was a key part, that had basically helped to bring fascism to Germany and enabled it to prosecute the military end of World War II. One of the most astounding and altogether unreported developments of the last several years concerns the fact that in the late fall of 2011, when Greece was groaning under the austerity being imposed, basically austerity, whether in the U.S., and we'll touch on that later, or in Europe, austerity is the continuation of war by other means. It is basically a Clausewitzian economics. You don't have to shoot someone or hang them or stab them or beat them to death or gas them in a gas chamber. If you deny them proper nutrition, proper clothing, particularly a job, which will lead to all of those things, proper housing, proper medical care, they're going to die or be seriously weakened. And that is a way of conducting war by other means. Now, the story that was almost unreported was the fact that in the late fall of 2011, when a transitional / provisional government was installed in Greece, the EU and Germany, basically Berlin and Brussels, with the acquiescence and encouragement of the International Monetary Fund, which has since turned against austerity, by the way, they installed a provisional government, and one of the elements of this provisional government was the Laos Party. That's capital L, capital A, capital O, capital S, as in Sam. It does not refer to the country in Southeast Asia. It is an acronym for a Greek title that I am not going to attempt to pronounce. It is in the written description for the record, 788. Now, the Laos Party is an explicitly fascist political party whose leader, George Kolatsiferis, has had some remarkable things to say. We are going to quote him directly. A fellow named Makis Voridis of the Laos Party was named the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure. His nickname when he was a law student was the Hammer. He fashioned a homemade axe or hammer and walked around the Greek college campus at which he was a graduate student to beat up or otherwise seriously physically inconvenience anyone with whose political views he disagreed. That's the kind of individual he is. That is representative of the kind of politics that the Laos Party, that characterizes the Laos Party. Now, the Laos Party, again, not referring to the country in Southeast Asia, should not be confused with the Golden Dawn. That is another Greek fascist party which has parliamentary representation and which whose popularity has grown in considerable measure because of the extreme social dislocation of the Greek produced by the Greek economy and the austerity that we're going to talk about, and that in turn has generated social unrest, anti-immigrant sentiment. And that should not be confused, however, with the Laos Party. In the years since the Laos Party was installed as part of the Greek government with no input whatsoever by the citizens of Greece, the cradle of democracy, the Golden Dawn has eclipsed the Laos Party, no pun intended. From the vitally important German foreignpolicy.com newsletter of December 21st of 2011, there is a post called Europe Adrift, and we're going to read part of it. And again, bear in mind that the installation of this fascist party as part of the Greek government was accomplished with no input from the citizens of that country, Greece, the cradle of democracy. Recently, a right-wing extremist party was again made a direct coalition partner in the country's government, this in Greece. The newly installed transitional government imposed under the supervision of Berlin and Brussels includes not only the Conservative and Social Democratic parties, but also the Laos Party. The Laos Party musters partisans of the former military dictatorship and is known for its racist and anti-Semitic pronouncements. Georgios Karatzaferis, K-A-R-A-T-Z-A-F-E-R-I-S, the Laos Party chairperson, is quoted to have said that he is proud, quote, not to be Jewish, homosexual, or communist, and which, quote, only a few can claim, unquote. He is said to have called out to the Israeli ambassador, quote, Jew ambassador, watch out where you tread. Let's discuss the Holocaust. Let's talk about all the fairy tales about Auschwitz and Dachau, unquote. Makis Voridis, D-O-R-I-D-I-S, a member of the Laos Party and Minister of Transportation in the Greek government imposed by Berlin and Brussels, began his career as the leader of a youth organization of the party presided over by Georgios Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos had been the military commander of the junta. He founded the party after he had been released from prison in the aftermath of the overthrow of his dictatorship. The German government evidently considers the Laos Party helpful for implementing its austerity dictate. And we're going to talk about just exactly what that austerity dictate has wrought in Greece. We're not being told about that. Recently, Greece was able to float its own bonds, and this was hailed as a great step forward and as indication that austerity worked. Rather, market analysts have noted that because the bonds paid 6% interest and because generally bond markets and interest rates, bond markets are depressed, let's just say the interest rates are very low, so bonds that pay that much are relatively rare. So there's a lot of hot money waiting to be thrown into anything that will pay relatively high interest, and the 6% being offered on the new Greek bonds is relatively high. What we're going to look at next is the fact that one of the factors that has victimized Greece in the post-war period, Greece has certainly mismanaged its economy. We're not going to have time in this program to talk about the millions of euros in bribes that were paid to Greek corporations, paid to the Greek entities, particularly the government, to purchase various German goods, including a bunch of German submarines. That was one of the things that contributed to the Greek debt. The Greeks certainly did mismanage their economy, but one of the factors that enters in here is the theory and the theoretical constructs of Karl von Clausewitz with the war and the post-war. We have spoken so many times, and you can read about them in the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. Like All Honorable Men by James Stewart Martin, you can read about the Bormann Flight Capital Organization. The very long story made very short, the Germans basically plundered all of the liquid assets of Europe and put them into 750 different corporate fronts in neutral countries. Basically, the liquid wealth of Europe was secreted abroad through the Bormann Flight Capital Network. Later, it was filtered back into Germany and was the foundation of the German so-called economic miracle of the late 50s and 1960s. We've talked about that before. It also was one of the reasons, the fact that there was this plunder was one of the reasons why the countries that were occupied during World War II fared so very badly. We are also going to take a look at the debt agreement of 1953, the London Debt Agreement, which basically released the Federal Republic of Germany, what was then West Germany, now Germany as a whole, from paying its wartime debts until there was a reunified Germany. This basically permitted much of the post-war success of the Federal Republic and had much to do with its ascension economically. Among the debts, by the way, that were that need not be repaid, that didn't have to be repaid, were the debts that Germany defaulted on from the bonds that it issued after the First World War that helped to rebuild Germany after that war. We spoke about that in Uncle Sam and the Swastika, and the German bond issues were inextricably linked with the Dawes and Young plans that we spoke about in that program. Once again, from the vitally important GermanForeignPolicy.com newsletter, which feeds, by the way, along the lower right-hand side of the SpitfireList.com website. This is from February 13th of 2012, a post called Protectorate-like. We read the following, skipping down. In the section called Old Debts, we read, a few days ago, a group of 28 Greek parliamentarians from various parties reacted to Berlin's persistent pressure by tabling a resolution calling on the parliament to debate Nazi Germany's plunder of Greece, which has never received indemnities. The indemnities not only refer to reparations in general, but also to the compulsory loans to the Reichsbank's clearing account. Shortly after the end of World War II, Nazi bankers were still in possession of Greek assets worth 476 million Reichsmarks, which has never been repaid by the Federal Republic of Germany. According to experts, this would today amount to between 3.4 billion euros, with interest included. Greece is not the only country that has waived Germany's old Nazi debts without receiving anything in return. As the economist Albrecht Ritschl, R-I-T-S-C-H-L, who teaches at the London School of Economics, confirmed, Nazi Germany's unpaid debts to its wartime adversaries would today range between 700 billion and 1.4 trillion euros with interest included, depending on the method of calculation. This does not even include the reparations for war damages. Because of the Federal Republic of Germany's long-standing policy of refusal, even totally indisputable Nazi debts have never been paid. Bond scored a decisive success in 1953 with the so-called London Debt Agreement, achieving a gigantic debt cancellation in the framework of which Greece also waived its former occupiers' enormous debts. That agreement permitted the Federal Republic of Germany the expunction of enormous debts created both before and since World War II. The agreement also stipulated that the question of the payment of Nazi debts and reparations would first be solved with a peace treaty to be concluded with a, quote, reunited, unquote, Germany. Parenthetically, of course, during the Cold War, that was not possible, and that lasted for basically a half century. Almost a half century. Again, continuing, quote, Germany has been in a very good position ever since, even as other Europeans were forced to endure the burdens of World War II and the consequences of the German occupation, unquote, says the economist Mitchell. This has made the resurgence of the greatest debt transgressor of the 20th century, namely Germany, possible. And again, people might think that it is somehow weird or peripheral or fetishistic for me to talk about the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. Paul Manning, by the way, was a protege of Edward R. Murrow during World War II. His work was underwritten by CBS. They would not touch the story. Various publishers had contracts canceled with Paul Manning because of pressure. He undertook the researching of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization at the encouragement of Edward R. Murrow, but sadly, in an indication of just how far down the society has sunk, now you have to go to Lowly Little Me and my website to access that material, and I'm not being falsely modest. The step downward from Edward R. Murrow and Paul Manning to Dave Emery is a very, 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 very large step indeed, from one of the most preeminent broadcast journalists working for a major network down to a little one-horse, non-commercial radio personality and blogger. Well, that's a long way down, but you can only do what you can do. Other articles, and these are in the description for the record program 788. I'm not going to read the articles themselves due to the limitations of time. Again, each program is turned into a long article-length description with all of the text and supplemental material that I don't have time to put in the broadcast in the For the Record category on the SpitfireList.com website. This particular program is particularly important in that regard. A story from the Hellas Fropp blogspot in the UK by Hellas Fropp, the person who does that, the interest that does that. According to Germany's Stern magazine, Germany owes Greece 300 billion euros from World War II. Also, the German publication Tagesspiegel said that basically the Nazis destroyed Greece during World War II due to the severity of their occupation and the hardships endured by the Greek people, and that did permanent damage, lasting damage, to Greece. This is from the Greek Reporter of Europe from April 11th of 2014. The story Tagesspiegel says Nazis destroyed Greece by Maria Korologou, K-O-R-O-L-O-G-O-U. Again, I'm not going to read the whole story. I'll read the story. The text is in the SpitfireList.com website in the written description for the record 788, as is yet another post from the Hellas Fropp blogspot from Greece of April 12th of 2013, with an ironic note. It is a miracle. Greek Parliament unanimously agrees. Greece must ask Germany to pay war reparations. And again, the text is in the description for the record 788. And the statement here is that one of the statements is made is that Greece was the only country to which the Nazis never paid reparations. No, that is not true, as we saw in the GermanyForeignPolicy.com website, or post, I should say, quoting Albrecht Mitchell from the London School of Economics. Yet again, from the Digital Journal of April 17th of 2014, Katerina Nikolas, N-I-K-O-L-A-S, most Greeks want government to pursue Germany for war reparations. And again, the text is in the description for the record program 788. I'm not going to read that, but it is already there. This, again, this program is a particularly important program for dedicated listeners to use the written description. Generally, this is sort of a two-tiered effort. Relatively casual listeners can hear the program and get an idea of what's going on. The more dedicated and serious and scholarly listeners are encouraged to go to the SpitfireList.com website and check out the description for the program. Yet another post, this from the Germany Watch blogspot, which also, like GermanForeignPolicy.com, feeds along the lower right-hand side of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. From Germany Watch of April 17th of 2013, Germany defaults and lies about it. This talks largely about the German default on the bonds that were issued after World War I and that helped to refinance the German economy in the period between the wars, setting the stage for the German war economy. We have heard a lot about the bailouts that have been offered to Greece. However, what we have not heard comes from the ZeroHedge.com of February 22nd of 2012. Scandal. Greece to receive negative cash, unquote, from second bailout as it funds insolvent European banks. This by Tyler Durden. This is what the bailouts, unquote, are all about. The Greek citizens are getting none of them. Earlier today, we learned the first stunner of the Greek bailout package, which, courtesy of some convoluted transmission mechanisms, would result in some, potentially quite many, Greek workers actually paying to retain their jobs, i.e., negative salaries. Now, having looked at the Eurogroup's statement on the Greek bailout, we find another very creative use of negative numbers. And by creative, we mean absolutely shocking and scandalous. First, as a reminder, even before the current bailout mechanism was in place, Greece barely saw 20% of any actual funding, with the bulk of money going to European and Greek banks, of which the former also ended up funding the ECB and European banks. Furthermore, we already know that as part of the latest set of conditions on the second Greek bailout, an escrow account will be established. This is simply a means for Greek creditors to have senior claims over any bailout cash that is actually dispersed for things such as, you know, a Greek bailout, where the money actually trickles down to where it is most needed, the Greek citizenry. Here is where it just got surreal. It turns out that not only will Greece not see a single penny from the second Greek bailout, whose entire use of proceeds will be limited to funding debt interest and maturity payments, but the country will actually have to fund that said escrow account. You read that right. The Greek bailout number two is nothing but a Greek-funded bailout of Europe's insolvent banks, and the Greek constitution is about to be changed to reflect this. Again, not only are some Greek workers having to pay have negative salaries they have to pay to retain their jobs, but the loans to Greece are basically just being recycled. Greece is kind of like a money-go-round, and the money is going directly to fund insolvent Greek creditor banks, and we haven't heard much about that either. That's why I'm going into the detail about what is really going on in Greece, because we are not getting told the truth, and the truth is stunning. And it is horrifying. I've made reference to the SpitfireList.com website. Using that website, the books on it, the descriptions, the audio files, it contains my entire life's work that is consummately important. More about Greece in Side 2. This, however, concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 788, Greek Tragedy Part 2, subtitled Clausewitzian Economics, The Continuation of War by Other Means. This is recorded on April 13th of the year 2014, I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.